let's move on because we have so much more to talk about, and I want to bring on my next guest. I'm really excited about this. We have Garth Davis, MD, the medical doctor of the Davis Clinic of the Methodist Hospital in Houston, Texas. He starred not only as a medical doctor, but he played one on TV in the hit TLC show Big Medicine. He is certified by the American Board of Surgery and is a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and a fellow of the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery. Recently named a super doc by Texas Monthly, he has been featured in the Houston Chronicle and other outlets. Garth lives in Houston with his family, and he's the author of Proteinaholic, How Our Obsession with Meat is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. Dr. Davis, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Okay. Well, I was off in Costa Rica last week, and I brought your book with me and got to read it there. I have the heavy, it's a heavy hardcover, and you know, when you travel, you want to travel light, but I took this with me and it was worth it.
Okay, great. I'm glad you liked it.
And I'm also a fan of Howard Jacobson, who wrote this book along with you. So I'm glad you wrote this book. Number one, there have been a lot of people who've been preaching plants for the decades. I'm a vegan for over 28 years, and I've been following this subject for a long time. But we need more doctors that are preaching the power of plants, because we have this image of medical doctors. You're gods, and you know how to save us. And we need to hear this important message about nutrition from knowledgeable medical doctors. So thank you for that.
No, happy to. Yeah, doctors, they really, I kind of feel let down the public. It's not really their fault. It's the whole medical system. You know, it's not, you've probably heard this before, but Western medicine isn't healthcare, it's sick care. And doctors are really good at taking care of someone once they get sick. They're not very good at preventing them from getting sick in the first place, which is what I really want to do in the future.
Now, you had a transformation where you were preaching one gospel, and then through some sort of epiphany, you found another path. Can you just give us a brief summary of that?
Yeah, well, you know how they say, there's no atheists in a foxhole. People get epiphanies pretty easily once they get sick, and I had gone for a life insurance policy test, and it kind of failed. It failed to get the best rates because my cholesterol level was sky high, and I was hypertensive, and I had liver function tests that were elevated, and I had also gone to get my eyes examined, and I had cholesterol deposits in my eyes. And I was like, you know, this is crazy, you know, because I knew at this point, I was only 35 years old, and I knew where this was going to lead me. And I started thinking about it, because as I started really looking into health, because all I had thought about was what you usually think about as a doctor, which is, you know, how do I cure disease? What surgeries? What medicines? I started to kind of question what I had learned in medical school. And is there another way? And one thing that really got me to think that way was the fact that despite the fact that we spend more of our GDP, more money on healthcare than any other country, we've got one of the lowest longevities in the world. And so why not look at the countries that do it well and have good longevity and look at the cultures that survive? And what I found, no matter where I looked, was that plant-based diets tended to lead towards longer lives. And so I started changing my diet, and I changed my health and the health of my patients. And, you know, 9 years later, things are perfect.
Things are perfect. I like that.
Yeah, no,
well, good for you.
High blood pressure. Much more athletic. You know, I feel stronger, faster, everything. You know, 9 years later, I've aged in reverse.
Now, what boggles my mind is how many medical doctors don't have that epiphany. And they continue down the path that they were trained in and don't want to really acknowledge something so simple.
Well, you know, there's this kind of paternalistic view in medicine. First of all, you got to understand, we don't learn in medicine any nutrition. There's no talk about how nutrition ties into heart disease or cancer or longevity. In all my years of studying medicine, no one told me about nutrition. It just wasn't brought up. And I gave a talk quite recently to a group of endocrinologists, you know, reviewing the data that, you know, meat causes diabetes. And that, you know, a plant-based diet is better off. And they were fairly accepting. You have to be accepting of the science. I've got, you know, tons of science backing me, which my book is all about, the science. But one of the ones I said to me is like, okay, that's fine. It might be that a plant-based diet is better for you, but no one's going to go on it. So, you know, why even think about it? There's this view that no one will actually change. So why even bother? Like, no one's going to stop eating a cheeseburger. So let's give everybody Lipitor, just, you know, protect against it. And that's kind of the mindset in Western medicine is, you know, people aren't going to make lifestyle changes. And if they're not going to make, and really, if you think about it, you go to see your doctor, you get 15 minutes with your doctor. And that's not enough time for them to really counsel you on how to do preventative health care. And so they don't have the time. They don't think the patients care. And so they just don't bring it up.
And that's the big problem, because, and I've heard it so many times, everything that you've just said from so many doctors. But if the doctors changed and the patients heard it enough from their doctors, that would make a tremendous difference, because I'm sure you've experienced that.
Yeah. And so you know, groups like PCRM are starting to go to the medical schools and seeing if we could start getting this as part of medical school education. And that would be huge. If you could start affecting these young doctors' minds before they get out and have the dogma implanted in their brain, that would be a huge asset.
You mentioned your book's all about the science, and it is, and I want to say that it's very easy to read. So thank you for putting it in layman terms that people can appreciate and make sense of, because that's really important.
Yeah, that was really our goal, was to, you know, I there was just so much science, but I had to explain it the way I explain it to my patients so that that it's accessible, because I don't want to leave the science out. Otherwise, people think I'm just lying to them. But at the same time, I don't want it to be so boring that you're like, oh, this is horrible. So try to give people an idea of how to read the science and show what's out there.
And this is a big problem today with the internet, with all kinds of bloggers and people trying to sound like experts, and some of them writing in such a way where it does sound kind of impressive. We seem to have these two schools of thought where people are promoting whole, minimally processed plant foods, and then there's this other circle of people who are promoting meat and butter and all kinds of animal products, and a lot of people are swallowing it, literally.
Yeah, because, you know, that's, people love to hear good news about their bad habits. And you know, the funny thing is, and it's part of the reason I want to write this book, is I have got, you know, this huge experience with thousands of patients. It's not just me writing a blog. And I see these guys writing these blogs on the high fat diets and things like that, and they haven't treated a patient ever. You know, they've never put someone on a diet and then followed them for months and months and months. I mean, some of the top names that you come across don't treat patients at all. And that's ridiculous. They have no ability to test what they're saying in practice. The problem with these ketogenic diets is that you're going to have a good response early on. And so people will equate that early good response with this being a good diet, and that absolutely is not the case. You got to look at the long-term repercussions of doing so. And, you know, look around the world. Show me a society that eats a mainly ketogenic diet. There aren't any, and those that do get close have very poor health. And so, you know, look at the plant-based diet. People, I mean, one of the longest lived cultures in the world are the Seventh Day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, and specifically the vegans in the Seventh Day Adventist community seem to be the healthiest of them all.
You're not related to Dr. William Davis, are you?
Oh, God, no.
there is a medical doctor who is preaching a completely different diet and lifestyle.
I mean, that book, like, compare his book to my book. I mean, there's like just no science in that book. Very little science. Lots of speculation, lots of straw man arguments.
Yes.
But you know, written so that it sounds authoritative. But I mean, how can you say that wheat is the biggest killer when some of the healthiest cultures in the world have eaten mainly wheat? And so it doesn't make sense when you look at it in real life and look at epidemiology. It just doesn't make sense.
Let's talk about the word vegan for a moment. You do not shy away from that word, and yet there are a number of doctors, medical doctors, who are promoting a whole foods plant-based diet who don't like to use the word vegan. Why do you use it?
Yeah, you know, I probably should shy away from it a bit. I mean, I use it
I love it.
Yeah, no, I do. To me, being vegan is more than health, right? I mean, you're vegan not just for your health. You're vegan because of the environment, and you're vegan because of the ethics. And I think these are things that people should think about when you go to eat food. And so I kind of like that ethical, moral reasoning. And the other thing is I really like people – it's hard to just – choose a whole food plant-based diet if you've eaten been a meat eater all your life. So I think you really have to part of convincing yourself. I mean, part of getting me to change was the fact that as I started studying it, yeah, it was good for my health, but just because something's good for our health doesn't mean we do it. I mean, people do bad things all the time for their health. But when you start getting all these other things in there, you realize the absolute cruelty that goes into a cheeseburger and the absolute damage as far as water and pollution and topsoil and all that kind of stuff that goes into eating a cheeseburger. It just makes it less palatable, and it could really help affect change if we start thinking in those broader terms.
Thank you, and I don't want you to give it up, so I'm glad you're using the word. I agree with you. okay, there was, you know, I read a lot of these kind of books, things promoting plant-based eating and all the science behind it, and even though if you just think of it from a really simple non-scientific point of view, to me it makes sense. I've been doing it for decades, but it's great to see more and more science, and the one thing that that popped out to me that I hadn't really heard before or realized before was fruit. And what you mentioned is not that fruit has a lot of protein, but it has the building blocks of protein, the amino acids.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not a complete supply, but it certainly is adequate. Look, I mean, you know, look at our closest genetic relatives, and they eat mainly fruit and plants and things like that. A chimpanzee only eats meat if it's in a starvation situation. And so you obviously can thrive on eating, you know, mainly plants and fruits and things like that. But yeah, you know, the fact of the matter is you don't just get amino acids from the actual fruit, but your body's constantly turning over your own body cells and recycling the amino acids that you already have in structural form. And so we have this constant labile supply of amino acids in our body. So it's very difficult for someone to become amino acid deficient. I mean, it would be really difficult and usually never occurs unless you're actually also calorie deficient. And so long as you're getting enough calories, you ought to be getting plenty of amino acids in order to maintain your body's health.
I love that you use the concept of recycling with our amino acids. That just made me feel very good about myself.
Makes you feel efficient. But I mean, look, you know, protein is important. And it's so important that nature has it everywhere, and that nature has created a situation where we recycle ours. And so it's just, you know, people don't come into doctor's offices protein deficient. You just don't see that. I mean, I got friends that are fruititarians, you know, raw vegan fruititarians.
Yep.
Eat mainly fruits, and they're the healthiest people I know. You know, they're not lacking. I checked their lab values and they're not lacking protein. I checked, I don't know if you know Christina Fully Raw, the Rawfully Vegan website. She came in and we did a video. I checked her labs. Her protein levels were perfect. And I mean, that girl eats mainly, she basically eats fruit all day long.
That's amazing.
She's doing fine.
That's amazing. You mentioned earlier in the program about meat causing diabetes.
Yes.
And I don't think a lot of people know this or believe it or would be really surprised to hear this. Now, when did people start talking about how meat caused diabetes?
That's been going on for a while. I mean, the more we've studied diabetes, you realize that diabetes isn't a carb problem. It's a carb utilization problem. In other words, carbs aren't causing the diabetes, but carbs are a problem because you can't utilize the carbs properly. So the reason you can't utilize the carbs properly is because what we found in this concept that I talk about a lot in the book called intramyocellular fat, which is fat inside the muscle cells. So what happens is you eat a lot of fat, and there's certain amino acids that stimulate the fat to go into muscle cells. And when the fat gets in muscle cells, it interferes with the muscle cells' ability to form insulin receptors. And then if you can't make insulin receptors, then you're not sensitive to insulin. Then you eat a carb and your blood sugar's going high and your body has to crank out even more insulin to try to get the sugar inside the muscle cell, and it can't do it. And, you know, that's the central problem, is the fat inside the muscle cell, not the carb itself. The high carb or the high blood sugar is the symptom, not the disease.
And I'm sure many people have their jaws hanging right now just hearing that.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of really good studies. I kind of go over studies in the book, the EPIC studies and things like that, that show that meat intake is definitely correlated with diabetes. And if you look at the Seventh-day Adventist studies where they followed Adventists for many years, they followed thousands and tens of thousands of them, and those that ate meat had a considerably higher rate of diabetes than those that didn't. In fact, the vegans had less than 2% of the vegans had diabetes. I don't even know how those vegans got diabetes, but I mean, you can't eat a lot of fat and junk food as a vegan, but 2% is pretty low considering that, you know, we're talking about in the next 20 years having 30% diabetes in the country.
Wow. Whew. Oh my goodness. Well, not if enough people get out and see your book and read it.
I hope
so. And understand it, right? Okay, yeah. Now you treat a lot of people who are overweight.
Yes.
And what are some of the challenges encouraging a plant-based diet? What are the biggest complaints or challenges you hear from your patients?
There's people bring up cost a lot, but cost is really kind of a BS excuse. Okay, so a plant-based diet could be very, very cheap. I give people, you know, diet plans and stuff like that that just uses, you know, canned beans and frozen mixed vegetables and frozen fruits. It's really affordable. I think prep time people bring up a lot. They have a hard time prepping, though, you know, if you're eating a lot of salads and stuff like that, it's a pretty easy prep. But I think really the biggest challenge for me used to be is that people were always like, where am I going to get my protein? I mean, that was why I wrote it. You know, people were like, I can't do that because I'm not going to get enough protein. So that's the main reason I wrote the book. If someone gets to the kind of point where I got, where I was like, oh my God, I am not healthy, I don't feel good, and I'm prepared to make changes, the changes really aren't that difficult. What I find is that people are actually kind of surprised how easy it is to eat this way and absolutely thrilled with how great they feel after starting to eat this way. And so I don't really push, I don't say you have to be vegan or you have to be vegetarian. I just want people eating a lot more fruits and vegetables and beans and nuts and seeds and grains and a lot less meat and dairy. And I explain that all to them, and they tend to start gravitating towards the healthier food items after a while.
Now, when you made this change, your whole family was on board at the same time. Is that correct?
Immediate family. My wife and, you know, my kids have to kind of have to eat whatever she serves them. But, I mean, they were baby. Like, you know, when we started this, we just had our first kid. So they've kind of grown up vegetarian, and they don't know. I mean, they know different. They just would never even dream of eating meat. You know, kids really gravitate towards fruits and vegetables. We kind of train that out of them. But my kids are disgusted about the, you know, the thought of eating meat. They've eaten meat. They think it's disgusting. They don't want to eat it.
Okay. There's that one other piece of exercise. And, I was just kind of smiling because there's an article in the Wall Street Journal from yesterday, Sloan Kettering's quest to prove exercise can inhibit cancer. And, I'm not a big fan of Sloan Kettering here in Manhattan. I've had to deal with them, and I think they're really slow to come to some of the things that we've learned a lot about in terms of natural healing with plants and exercise. But exercise is important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a huge part of making yourself healthy. I mean, you've got to stress your body a little bit, and that stress to the body actually creates a stress response, and it's that stress response that's so helpful for things like cancer. So if you do some exercise, you generate free radicals, which sounds bad, but then your body generates the enzymes to fight them, and you get this thing called superoxide dismutase, which is a fancy word for a super antioxidant, and that's what prevents the cancers. But, I mean, exercise is so important for your heart. It's so important for your mind. It's so important for your muscles. It's so important for your weight. And so it just needs to be part of a healthy lifestyle.
Now, in your past, you starred in the hit TLC show Big Medicine, but you were preaching a different story at the time, correct?
Yeah, I mean, at that point in time, it was all about the surgery. There really wasn't anything to do with the diet very much. In fact, I wrote a book at that time called The Expert's Guide to Weight Loss Surgery, and in there I preached, you know, a high-protein, eat-your-meat-first diet, which obviously I've since learned my ways and changed.
Any chance of a new show like Big Plants or something like that?
You know, until there's a lot of marketing behind that kind of stuff, I just, you know, there's no big broccoli that's going to put a lot of money behind a show like that. You know, it's not like, you know, meat, dairy, and sugar that all have their, you know, very well-funded boards.
Because our word stick out. Care is all about the money. Yep, it's all about the money. Yeah. Well, Dr. Davis, thank you for writing this book, Proteinaholic, How Our Obsession with Meat is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. It is outstanding. And also, I just
found out that Kindle is doing a one-month promotion of my book. And so if you go on Amazon, you can get the Kindle version for $1.99.
Oh, get it today. Absolutely. That's terrific.
Yeah.
And probably an easier way to travel to other places if you carry it on a Kindle than like what I did.
You can do it with a Kindle.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food and for writing the book and for doing all that you're doing and helping so many people.
Thanks, Karen. Enjoy being there.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.
All right, that was Dr. Garth Davis, the author of Proteinaholic. Again, I'm going to say how our obsession with meat is killing us and what we can do about it. Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, we have, about 6 minutes left, right? And I wanted to talk a little bit more about Costa Rica. And when I was there, there are just some things that kind of stand out that like I said, you can learn from walking in these undeveloped areas outside of the cities where there's farming and some very simple houses. Some of them are just shacks that people live in. I love looking at the cows that are there, the cows that are grazing. They are thin. They're not as big and bulky as some of the cows we get to see here in the United States. Of course, most of the cows that are raised here in the United States, we don't see because they're hidden in factory farms or on feedlots. And the thing that really is profound is looking at these cows' udders, because you barely can see them. They're small and they're high above the ground. You know, if you look at the cows today that have been given antibiotics and hormones, the ones who have been given recumbent recumbent bovine growth hormone in order to give more milk. Their udders have expanded to the point where they couldn't even feed their own baby calf if they wanted to, because the calf can't get underneath the udder. It is so heavy and so large and so close to the ground. And it's just kind of stunning and beautiful to see the more natural animal, non-human animal, of course, grazing peacefully. I didn't know what end they were going to have, because people in Costa Rica, as anywhere, drink milk and do slaughter animals for meat. But these animals looked a lot happier and a lot healthier and had very small udders, which was really, really refreshing. While I was there, I got to experience some of the local foods, and that's one of the things that I love about traveling. And we can get a lot of these foods here in the United States. They're just a lot more expensive. I like to eat fresh and locally, and I have to admit I had my fill of papaya, local papaya. And one of my favorite foods there, if you've never had a chance to try it, is something called the pejibayes. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. P-E-J-I, pejibayes, B-A-Y-E-S. It's a fruit that is related to the coconut, and it's much smaller. It's like they grow in clusters on these thorny trees. And they're about the size of a plum, and they come in red and yellow and green. And what people do is they boil them in salty water. And I remember the first time I had them, they were just incredible. And every time I've had them since, they're incredible. But they have a flavor like chestnut and pumpkin. And after they're cooked, you peel them and you just eat them. They have a little pit in the middle, of course, that you discard. But it's a really wonderful, rich food. And so exciting because you can't get them here. I haven't seen them. And such a treat when I'm there to try them. So if you ever have an opportunity to try the Pei Bais, I highly, highly recommend them. So good. And very, very filling. I've heard that they're like 200 calories each, so they're pretty dense. Yeah. So I hope you read our What Vegans Eat post from this past week because there's some fun stuff there. And we have some new recipes up, as always. And you should check them out, too, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. There's an event coming up this Thursday in Brooklyn called Food Bites. You might check out foodbitesummit.com, and that's food, B-Y-T-E-S. And I'll be going there and reporting on it and letting you know about it next week. But it's a conference that promotes all kinds of new food businesses. They're not all vegan, but a lot of them are, and it's going to be fun to see what some of the new products are out on the horizon. And there you have it. We've come to the end of the program, and I thought it was really phenomenal. Really impressed with my first guest, Dee Anthony, and Dr. Davis's book is outstanding, so I hope you get a chance to pick up that Kindle version for $1.99 and share it. We need to be spreading this message of plants for so many reasons. Thanks for joining me and tuning in love today, and have a delicious week. Bye-bye.